Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Mem Zayin Amud Bet. Gemara is continuing to explain the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Hevir Hodayat HaMaser. Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who came after Shimon HaTzadik, he removed Vidui Maser, that they no longer had the practice to say Vidui Maser. Afu Bitel, in addition to that, he was Mevatel the Urim, the Nokfim. And then in addition, Adyamav Hayapatish Makebi Yerushalayim, until his day, there were hammers working in Yerushalayim. And his period of time when he was the Kohen Gadol, you didn't have to ask about Demai. The Magar is going to go through each one of these institutions of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. So the first of which is, he removed Vidui Maser, Mait Aima. What's the reason that he did that? Amar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, Lefeish Einot Dim Oto Kitikuno. Because they don't give it properly. The Rachmana Amar Diyavid Leviim. The Torah says that you have to give Maaser Rishon to the Levim, Va'anan Kayavina on the Kohanim. On the other hand, we give it to the Kohanim. So we saw this Sugya in Yevamot, that this was a penalty that Ezra instituted against the Levim, who didn't come when Ezra returned to Eretz Yisrael. In that Aliyah, there were no Levim, only Kohanim. And therefore, he gave the right of Maaser Rishon to the Kohanim instead of the Levim. Nevertheless, the Torah does say that you have to give it to the Levim, so they're not doing it properly. So how can you say, Vidui Maaser, that I did as Hashem had instructed me? You can't make such a declaration if you're not doing it that way. Saw the machloket there as to whether it makes me Ikar Adin, because the Kohanim are a subset of the Levim, and therefore it's okay, or whether it was just a knas that Ezra imposed because the Levim didn't show up, and it was given to the Kohanim. But either way, it's not going to the Levim. Where it says, Lo de Ashar Maaserot. Okay, so you can't do Vidui on the Maaser Rishon. What about all the other items that you're giving? Maaser Sheni, Maaser Ani. Why can't you say the Vidui on those items? Amar Reish Lakish, Kol Bait She'ein Mitvadel Maaser Rishon, Shuvenu Mitvadel Ashar Maaserot. If you can't do the Vidui on the Maaser Rishon, then you can't be Mitvadel, you can't do a Vidui Maaser on the remaining Maaserot, Mait Haimo. What's the reason that if you can't do Maaser Rishon, everything else falls apart? Am Rabbi Yeho Patach Bo Akatuv Tchila. Because that's what the Pasuk begins with. If you look in the Vidui Maaser, it says, Vigam Netativ LeLevi, I give it to the Levi, and then it continues on, Lager Le'atom V'Almana. So if you open with that refrain, then everything else follows. So even though, truthfully, if you look in Vidui Maaser is really about Maaser Sheni. Despite the fact that Maaser Sheni is the Ikar, it begins with Maaser Rishon, and I would say it in this manner that everything else is dependent on Maaser Rishon. You can only have a Maaser Sheni if you've removed the Maaser Rishon. You can only have Maaser Ani if you've already taken off Maaser Rishon. So Maaser Rishon is a pivotal aspect of getting to the other Maaserot, and therefore, if you can't say the Vidui over Maaser Rishon, it nullify the entire Vidui Maaser, and don't just say, oh, say it on whatever remains. But it says, "Ki tachalel laser kol maser dvoatcha b'shana shlishit shnat maser v'natata l'levi lager liyatom v'yamana v'achlu b'sharecha v'saveyu v'amarte lifnei Hashem lokecha bi'arti ha'kodesh min ha'bayit v'gam nitativ l'levi lager liyatom v'yamana k'chom mitzvotcha shetzivitani lo avarti mitzvotecha v'lo shachachti lo achalti b'yoni b'imenu lo v'yarti b'imenu b'tamei Lo natati mimenu meit, shemati b'kol Hashem elokai, siti kol asher tzivitani. So here you have a list of the things that you did with the Trumot HaMaaserot, and Chazal or Darshan, different aspects of what you say in the Vidui as referring to the different matnot that you're supposed to give. But you see that it opens, b'gam netati v'lelevi, or menatati l'levi, l'givim motama, both times it opens with the Levi as being the Maaser, and therefore, if you can't say the Vidui over the Maaser Rishon, you don't say it over the remaining matanot that you give. Where it says, Michlal de Afrushe Abim Mefarshe. So from based on what you're suggesting here, the reason that he's Mevatel the Vidui Maaser is because they were giving Maaserot. They were giving it properly. It just happens to be that there was either a Takanat Ezra or a reason they were giving it to the Kohanim instead of the Levim. That's the only failure here. Otherwise, they were doing what they were supposed to do with regards to Maaserot. Vatanya. Don't we have a Braita? Afhu Bitel et Avidui Vigazar al Adamai. Which again, we saw in our Mishnah, the last item that's mentioned there, that in his day, you didn't have to ask about the Demai. So now here you have a Braita explaining that he was Mevatel the Vidui, and it was Gozer al Demai. He created Demai. Demai means that we have tvua, grains that are purchased from an amaretz, and we're uncertain as to whether trumot and masrot were removed from such grains. So the fact that he's gozer, that there is demai, shows you that the people are not being mafrish, trumot and masrot. And similarly, the two are connected. He's mevatel de vidui, and he's gozer la demai, makes it sound like the reason that he got rid of the vidu maser is because nobody was giving trumot and masrot. The fi, sheshalach b'chol gvul Yisrael, he sent messengers to the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, v'ra'ash ein mafrishim ele truma gdola vilvad. He saw that the people were only taking off truma gdola. The reason to take off truma gdola is twofold. One is that truma gdola midoraita requires just a single kernel. Anything that you take off suffices as truma gdola, and therefore it's not a big deal to give truma gdola. Second reason is that truma gdola has a mita bidei shemaim associated with it. So nobody wants to play around with the mita bidei shemaim. So you remove the truma gdola, you get rid of that problem. Umaiser rishon, umaiser sheni, miktzatan ma'asrin, umiktzatan ein ma'asrin. So with regards to maiser rishon, maiser sheni, some people took it off, some people did not take it off. You can see here a reference in the Masorat HaShas to a Tosfot in Shabbat. Tosfot in other places in Shas also mentioned, it's not clear here when they say some do, some don't, makes it sound like it was kind of iffy. But Tosafot in other places seems to suggest that the majority of people did take off Masrot. It was just not an overwhelming majority. It was a majority, but not a super majority or a clear-cut majority. And therefore, they had to be choshesh for it. So say it was 51%, 52%, you have to worry because there's a significant minority that doesn't, but not that the majority didn't. That's the way Tosafot frames it in other places. Amr lehem, banai, bo, vomer lechem. Let me explain something to you. Kishem shetrumah gdola yesh ba'avon mita. Just like trumah gdola has mita bidei shemayim associated with it, kach trumat maser v'tevel yesh ben avon mita. You still have another aspect of trumah that's embedded inside of the trumot maserot. And just like there's a chiyu mita bidei shemayim with regards to trumah gdola, there's also a chiyu mita bidei shemayim with trumat maser. Tevel as well may carry an avon mita. That's subject to machloket rishonim as to whether it's associated to the item that has yet to be taken off. So if you haven't removed trumah gdola, if you haven't removed trumat maser, which are both subject to mita bidei shemayim, then the tevel is also subject to mita bidei shemayim, or possibly, even if you haven't removed maaser sheni or maaser ani, there might be a mita bidei shemayim period for tevel. That's subject to machloket rishonim. But either way, what his point is, they were trying to get rid of the problem, mita bidei shemayim, taking off the trumah gdola. Meantime, there was trumat maser that was still left, because the maaser rishon they didn't take off, and the maaser rishon embedded in the maaser rishon is trumat maser. Maaser rishon is given to the Levi, trumat maser to the Kohen. That trumat maser has the same status as trumah gdola, and it's chayv mita bidei shemayim. So I go, you're taking care of the trumah gdola because of this issue, but you're leaving behind the problem of the trumat maser. Hamad v'itkin lehem. So then he put a takana in place. Halokeach perot me'am haaretz, mafrish mehem maaser rishon u'maaser sheni, maaser rishon mafrish memenu trumat maaser v'notna l'kohen. So he instituted then a way to deal with the produce of an am haaretz. Prior to that point in time, they just wouldn't purchase. They'd have to ask, did you take off trumat maaserot? If he was a chaver and did so, then they would purchase from him. If it was an am haaretz who did not, they would not purchase from that individual because they were uncertain as to whether they really did or didn't take it off and how they did it. So here he came up with a solution to deal with the Am Haaretz, a solution that is otherwise known as demai, which is treated as unknown. Demai means damai. What is this? We don't know what the status of this is. So we have a way to deal with it without causing a huge monetary loss. And that is, you buy payroll from Haaretz, you take off Maaser Rishon, you separate the 10% for the Maaser Rishon, and you separate the additional 10% for the Maaser Sheni. Maaser Rishon mafrish menu trumat maser. From that Maaser Rishon, you take off 10%. So you take off 10% of the 10%. That's trumat maser. That, not the Kohen. That you have to give away the Kohen, because it's risky. It's a chiyuv mita bidei shemayim. Maaser Sheni ole v'ochlo b'Yerushalayim. The Maaser Sheni is not a loss to you, because either you take the produce up to Yerushalayim and eat it there yourself, or you redeem it on money and take it up to Yerushalayim, so it's yours. Maaser Rishon or Maaser Ani, that you're mafrish, hamotzi michavero alav haraya. Once you're mafrish them, then the produce is no longer tevel. It's no longer problematic because you've taken off the Maaser Rishon and you've taken off the Maaser Ani. Maaser Rishon and Maaser Ani inherently are chulin. There's nothing kadosh about them, and even in Israel can eat that. If you get invited over to a Levi's house, you can eat the Maaser Rishon that he serves. If you get invited over to an Ani's house, you can eat the Maaser Ani that he has. It's chulin, it's completely chulin. Unlike Truma Gedolah and Trumat Maaser, which are kodesh, and only a Kohen can eat. Therefore, number one, there's no restriction in eating it. Number two is, then it becomes a monetary question. Monetary question is, who's entitled to this? Do you have to take off Maaser Rishon and the Levi's entitled to it? Maaser Ani and the Ani's entitled to it? Or maybe the Amaretz already took off Masrot. If he already took off Masrot, then you don't have to give it. The obligation or burden of proof is on the person trying to make the claim here. The claimant is the Levi and the Ani. So you'll hold on to it until they can prove otherwise that you really owe it. So here, your losses are minimal in taking care of the problem of the produce of the Amaretz. All you're going to give away is Trumat Maaser. You're going to give away 1% of what you have in order to be mitakein that which is there. The Maaser Rishon and the Maaser Ani, you're going to end up eating because it is demai, and there's uncertainty, and it's an uncertainty with a monetary matter. Therefore, the burden of proof is on the party trying to take it from you. And otherwise, you're going to keep it because there's no proof that you have to give it. That's a separate issue. One issue is taking it off to make it ois tevel. I mean, that removing Maaser Rishon and Maaser Ani removes the tevel shame from the dagan. The second is there's a monetary obligation to give it to the Levi and to give it to the Ani. That monetary obligation is subject to the regular rules of monetary claims or disagreements where the burden of proof lies with the party that's trying to extract it. So if he can bring proof, then he can take it. Otherwise, it's yours because there's no way for him to prove and you're the one who's machzik in it, you're the one holding it. He wants to take it. He's got to bring proof to that fact. Which is different than what happens in Eretz Yisrael today. In Eretz Yisrael today, where you're mafrish, the Trumat Maaser and the Trumat Gdolah, in a similar manner to get rid of the Shem Tevel, when you're mafrish, the Maaser Rishon and Maaser Ani, if you're being mafrish from produce, like in your backyard, which you know for sure is Tevel, then the Maaser Rishon and Maaser Ani belongs to them. And you have to give the Maaser Rishon to the Levi, and you have to give the Maaser Ani to the Ani. There you can't say, oh, motzi mechavero levaraya, he has to come and prove it. It's clear that you owe the money in that case because it was tevel for sure. This is only a solution with regards to demai when there's uncertainty and whether there's an obligation to give masrot. This is where it comes up with that chita of Tosafot who says that actually the majority did give masrot. And that's why the burden of proof is really on the Levi and the Ani to come and prove it because most Amayarits were taking off masrot. It just wasn't a super majority or wasn't a clear majority. So because there's a significant minority, we do this as a precautionary measure, and that precautionary measure, then you have to have the other party bring the burden of proof is on the other party then to extract the Maaser Rishon and Maaser Ani from you because it's not clear that you really owe it. So Mara says, Tarte Tikein, that Yochanan Kohen Gadol actually put two institutions in place. Bitel Vidui de Chaverim. He eliminated Vidui Maaser even for the Chaverim who are Mafrish Trumot and Masrot, despite the fact that they're doing everything. They still can't say Vidui Maaser because they're giving Maaser Rishon to the Kohanim and not to the Levim. Because Zarla Demai Shal Amei Aretz. And separately, for Amei Aretz, he was gozer that if you purchase produce from the Amei Aretz, that you're only Mafrish ala Safek. In the past, people were Mafrish as if they didn't give Trumot to Masrot. And the problem with that is that nobody's going to buy from Amei Aretz because then it becomes an expensive proposition. You buy from the Amei Aretz, now you have to be Mafrish all the Trumot to Masrot. By the time you're finished, you've lost money in purchasing from an Amar. It's not worth it. But once he instituted that, you treat it like demai because he checked and he saw they were taking off Trumat Gdolah. And it seems like the majority were taking off Masrot. He allowed the institution of this hafrasha of demai, ala safek, where you only lose 1% of the produce. So that way people were buy from the Amaretz, do the hafrashot based on the demai, and then keep everything except for the Trumat Maaser that had to be given to the Kohen. And therefore made it feasible to buy from an Am Haaretz because you weren't going to lose all your, so much in the way of produce when you bought from the Am Haaretz. Rafahu bitelata me'orurim. He eliminated the me'orurim. My me'orurim, what is this me'orurim that he eliminated? Amrach v'abachol yom v'yom shayu omdim levim al duchan. Every morning when the levim used to go onto the duchan and sing their shira, v'omrim, they used to open. Ura, lama tishan Hashem. Wake up, why do you sleep Hashem? Amar lehem, d'chiye sheina lifnei ha-makom. Since when is there sleep before God? Halo kvar ne'amar. Don't we know about God? Hinei lo yonum velo yishan shomer Yisrael. The Garden of Israel never sleeps. So how can you say, wake up Hashem? Now they were doing this on a daily basis as if that they were waking up Hashem each morning. which clearly is improper and made no sense. They were saying it is a pasuk in Tehillim, so you can't say, oh, why are they saying it? They're saying a pasuk in Tehillim. But they were utilizing it in a manner, which is they were saying it daily, Ura lametishan Hashem, wake up, why are you sleeping Hashem, as if they were awakening Hashem each morning. And he felt that that was improper. So he says, Ella, what's the explanation in these psukim? One that says Hashem doesn't sleep, one that says, wake up Hashem. Ela b'zman sh'Yisrael shruim b'tzar, v'ovdei kochavim b'nachat v'shalva, when B'nai Yisrael are being oppressed, and the v'ovdei kochavim are calm and enjoying life, v'kach ne'emar, ura lametishan Hashem. That's when that pasuk is said. That pasuk is said as a melitza to say when B'nai Israel are on the down and the Uvdei Kochavim are ascendant, then it looks like Hashem is sleeping. It's as if there's Hester Panim of Hashem. And that's basically what that parak in Tehillim, Amatzeach Ibnei Korach Maskil, that parak in Tehillim is speaking about difficult times for the Jews. It's speaking about Galut. It's speaking about dark times. In those dark times, when there's Hesterat Panim, there you say, Ura Lametishan Hashem, meaning that Hashem, arise. Not that he's sleeping, but it's as if he's not present, because it looks like Hashem's not helping out his people. And that's where it's appropriate to say, Ura Lametishan Hashem, not because you're waking him up, but you're asking him to stop the Hastarat Panim. On the other hand, when B'nai Israel have the Migdash and they are ascendant, there's no reason to say, Ura Lametishan Hashem, because Hashem's presence is obvious. And it's manifest. There's a Beit HaMikdash. B'nai Yisrael have sovereignty over themselves. So there is no reason to say Ura Lametishan Hashem in that case. And that's why he was mevatel. This is the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. They say we're in Chanukah now. It is in the period of the glory of the kingdom of the Chashmonaim, post-Chanukah. And therefore there's no reason to be saying such a pasuk in that context. Beit HaNukfim. He eliminated the Nukfim. What are the Nukfim? So my nukfim, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, shayu misartim le'egel ben karnav, kedei shipol dam ve'enav. They had this practice where they used to make little cuts between the eyes of the calf in order that blood would run down to its eyes, and that would cause it to be mitbalbel, to be confused. And in that confusion, they'd be able to pin the animal down and shecht it. Because otherwise the animal fought against being shechted. So they had to have a way to somewhat subdue the animal so that they could shecht the animal. So they used this as the method for subduing the animal, was they made these little cuts that caused blood to flow into the eyes, and that confused the animal and gave them a chance to shecht it. Atayu Batil, he came ahead and nullified that practice, eliminated the practice. Mishum demechse be'emuma. It looks like you're putting a blemish in a korban that you're about to bring. Seems completely inappropriate to make a cut in something that you're about to put on the mizbeach. But mitzatano, they had a braita, so you chuftim oto b'maklot. They used to hit it with sticks or staves. V'kederach shosim oto lifnei avodat kochavim. The way that they do it in front of the avodah zarah. Again, it was a method for subduing the animal so that they could shecht it. Amaleh, man matay etem machilim nevelot the mizbeach. How long are you going to bring the velot on the mizbeach? Nevelot. These aren't nevelot. Hashachet luhu. They're going to shecht them afterwards. That's not a nevela. Ela trefot. How long are you going to bring trefot? Shema nikev krum shel malach. Because when you're hitting it with the sticks, you can cause an injury that would puncture the film that's around the brain. And the film around the brain, if it has a hole in it, is considered to be a trefa. So by hitting it with the sticks, especially if they hit it on the heads in order, again, to subdue the animal, then there's a high likelihood that the animal becomes a trefa. So how could you use this animal now that you are acting in this way prior to shechting the animal? Notwithstanding the fact that neither of these practices seem to be proper practices anyway. Leaving aside the fact that it looks like a mum, or that there's a possibility of trefa, it's just not the proper way to treat an animal, especially an animal that you're going to bring as a korban lifnei Hashem. So amad v'itkinayem tabaot b'karko. So in the end, he put into place these rings in the ground. And as Rashi describes over here, we know this from the Gemara and the Mishnayot in Yoma, is that they had these rings which allowed them then to lock the animals in place. Once they locked the animals in place, it was much easier to shecht them. The Rambam says that they had karot tabot on the ground that they locked their feet into. Rashi says they put their necks into it. But either way, he put in a mechanism in place by which they could hold the animals or pin the animals down without having to resort to these improper methods. And so not only did he eliminate the practice, but he also brought a solution to the problem, and he put these tabot in by the mizbeach that they could use to shech the animals. Ad yamavaya patish makeh b'Yerushalayim. Till his day, hammers used to work in Yerushalayim, so what's the big deal if they're hammering in Yerushalayim? No, it was cholo shel moed. And cholo moed, they used to have hammers hitting in Yerushalayim. So cholo moed, you're not supposed to be doing work. But, despite that fact, they were doing work in Yerushalayim, but it was work that was gavar aved. It was work that was mutar on cholo moed, something that would have been lost if they didn't do the work then. It was necessary work. The problem was that the patish, the hammers, were very loud. And since they were very loud, it made it sound like there was work going on in Yerushalayim, and he felt it was inappropriate for cholo moed to have this behavior or this work going on. And therefore he was mevatel. He said there's going to be no hammering work in Yerushalayim during cholo moed, even if it's a davar aved. I still do not permit it because you want the city to be a city of rest, a city that reflects the aura of a cholo shel moed or the atmosphere of cholo shel moed, and you have to then remove any loud noises that would be caused by working, even if it's work that is permitted. And therefore he shut that down on cholo moed. Things that are mutar on cholo moed are mutar. This was mutar on cholo moed. He went out of his way to stop because of the noise that it created, and it ruined the atmosphere, even if it was permitted work. All of his life, nobody had to ask about demai. Kidamran. That we explained already, which is that since he instituted the way to deal with produce that was demai, you no longer have to ask the Amaretz if he was mafrish or whether you have to believe him or not. You bought it and you dealt with it the way that we explained above, which is you mafrish the items and keep them for yourself. All right, next Mishnah. Mishabat la Sanhedrin, batel hashir mi beit mishtaot. From the time that the Sanhedrin stopped functioning, so too the song from the wedding halls was eliminated. Shememar bishir lo yishtu yayin. That they would no longer drink their wine to song. It's not clear here from the pasuk how you know that it has to do with the Sanhedrin. That the Gemara will bring an alternate pasuk to help us understand that. Mishemetu nevi'im rishonim. Once the earlier nevi'im passed away, but lo urim vitumim. The urim tumim was no longer functioning. The Urim V'Tumim is the Choshen of the Kohen Gadol that has the Shem Hashem inside of it. And when you ask of Hashem, or you have a query of Hashem, they were answered through the Urim V'Tumim based on the lights and the letters on the Choshen. Mishara Beit HaMikdash, Batel HaShamir. After the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, the Shamir was eliminated. We'll see at the end of today's daf that the Shamir was this little creature that helped them with cutting stones and hard materials. Benofet sufim. In addition, the sweet honey or delicacies were eliminated. Upasku anshei amana miYisrael. And were eliminated people of faith from Israel. Now, anshei amana can be used in different ways. Sometimes it means people of honesty. Other times it means people who are of faith, who rely on Hashem. The two might be connected, which is that people only lie, or when they lie, it's clear that they don't have emunah in Hashem, or they don't believe in Hashem, because they cheat to make their money, because they don't believe that Hashem is going to provide them with parnasa. So the cheating or the lying itself is a lack of emunah in Hashem. But here, the reference we'll see in the Gemara is the Anshei Amanah are people who are believing in Hashem. We'll see that in the beginning of tomorrow's daf, Shnemar. Hoshi Hashem ki gemar chasid, upasu emunim. Tilim yud bet, which is Lamanetzeach ala Shminit, which is the Shir Shoyom that we say on Shmini Atzeret. The second pasuk there is Hoshi Hashem ki gemar chasid ki pesu emunim mi bnei adam. So you see over there, Hoshi Hashem, Hashem, save us, bring us salvation, because there are no more chasidim ki pesu emunim mi bnei adam. There are no more longer any of these emunim amongst men. And these faithful people no longer exist. Bishim Gomei Omer, Hiid Rabbi Yeshua, Yom Shecharab Beit HaMikdash, Ein Yom Shein Bo Klala, there is no day that doesn't have a curse on it, V'lo Yarad Atal Livracha, the dew no longer comes down with the blessing that it used to bring, Nital Tama Perot, and the flavor of the fruit has been taken. This is something that we speak about on Tisha B'Av in the keynote on Tisha B'Av, which is that the Churban HaBayit was not simply a destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, but it has cosmic and celestial ramifications. It affects all the constellations. It affects nature. The destruction of the Mikdash wasn't solely a singular or contained event. It's an event that has influence or impact on everything, which is that the days now become cursed days. And then the Gemara will speak about that in more detail in tomorrow's daf. And also the towel, the dew that came down that normally is associated with bracha, no longer brought that bracha with it. And the fruits just don't taste the same. Now that the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, it took away the flavor of the fruits. Yossi Omer, afni tal shumana peirot, the fat of the peirot, which is both the flavor as well as the nourishing qualities of the fruits were removed. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, hatara natla et etatam ve etareach, that the lack of tara, being mitaher and removing the tumah miklal Yisrael, that took away the flavor and the aroma or the good odors that are associated with the fruits. Hamasrot natlu et shumana dagan. The lack of taking off masrot removed the fat of the produce of the grains. Again, that's a midah keneged midah, because the way the Torah terms masrot is the chelev. It's the fat of the Adam. Chelev yitzar v'chelev, chelev dagan v'chelev yitzar. So that chelev that you, that chelev that they're speaking about means that's the fat that's removed from it is given as the gift. Well, you stopped giving masrot, so therefore the fat, quote unquote, of the dagan was removed. Chomim omrim, haznut v'akshafim kilu et hakol. That the promiscuity and the infidelity and the witchcraft caused the elimination of all of that. And we saw that back, if you remember, on Sota Dav Dalid, we saw the fact that someone who gets involved in znut in the end goes around begging on the doors for food. So that caused the problem. The znut and the kshafim ruined all of the great bracha that Hashem bestows on Klal Yisrael. So now the Gemara asks about the Mishnah. Mi mai, mishabot la Sanhedre k'tiv. How do you know that this has associated with the elimination of the Sanhedrin is what caused Bashir lo yishtu yayin? How do you know that the two are correlated? Ravuna b'reid Rav Yeshua d'amarkro, the posuk says in Eicha, zikenim mishar shavatu bechurim miniginatam. So when the zikenim were eliminated from the shar, they were left furloughed in the gateways. What does that mean? The gateways, the shar refers to Beit Din. That's where the Beit Din sat, and that's the term that's used in Sefer Devarim to describe Beit Din, is Bisharecha. So the Zekenim, Mishar Shavatu, when the Zekenim were no longer sitting in the gateways, they were no longer part of the Beit Din then, Bachurim Miniginatam. The youngsters were no longer in song. So that's how we know there's an association between the elimination of the Sanhedrin to the elimination of the song at the Beit HaMishteh. Amarav Udna Deshama Zimra Te'aker. The ear that hears these songs, Te'aker, should be removed, destroyed, because it's inappropriate. After the Churban HaBayit, to be engaged in these songs is inappropriate because it reflects a indifference to the Churban HaBayit to have this song during the time period where we are living through Churban HaBayit or with the Churban HaBayit. Amar Rova Zimra Bebeita Churva Besifa. That if you have song in the house, then destruction comes to the doorstep. Shneamar, kol yishorer bechalon, the song is heard in the window. Chorei basaf, destruction is at the threshold. Ki arza era, because the cedars have been destroyed. Mai ki arza era, what does it mean that the cedars have awoken or destroyed here? Rabbi Yitzchak, since when is a house that's made out of cedar subject to weakened or destruction? It's a very strong house. Cedar is extremely strong wood. It should be just the opposite. So that even a house that's made out of cedar will be weakened by the song of the house or be destroyed by the song of the house. From this we can conclude that when destruction comes to the house or comes to a place, it begins at the threshold. The threshold being the dividing point between the outside world and the inside of the house. And so the threshold is the point of exposure to the outside world. And so the influences of the outside world come into the house through the threshold, through the doorway. So you're talking about the destruction that is wrought on the house, but that's a literal destruction or figuratively, meaning that the things that cause the destruction of the house enter through the doorway. That's what is said by this, Shnemar Cherev Basaf, that the sword is at the threshold. Some say you learn it out from here. Ushia yukat sha'ar. Desertion destroys the gateways. So again, there you see that the destruction starts at the gateways. Ushiyah, as Rashi notes over here, is a house that is abandoned or deserted. And in there, the Shadim take up residence. And they're the Shadim of destruction. And that destruction starts at the Shar, at the gateway. So again, this idea that the boundary between the outside world and the inside of the house, that's the place where the destruction begins. And again, that's also interesting now that we're in Chanukah, because that's what we say ever. The mezuzah is on one side. You have the Nerot Chanukah on the other side. Those are basically the filter by which that which in the outside world comes into the house. And so the mezuzah, and here we have the Nerot Chanukah act as a filter that say that we have to be careful about what we let into the house from the outside world, because that's where the destruction begins. The negative influences and the things that will cause the destruction of the house come through that doorway. And therefore, we need symbols there to remind us of that fact, that we have to be careful about what enters into the house because of the destruction that can be wrought from that which enters into the house. Now, there is a Mesorah, the Tosfot Yom Tov over here brings a Mesorah from Rav Haigon, that in terms of the Shirot, not all Shirot and Zmirot were eliminated. Shirot and Zmirot of Chaste Hashem and the Masim Hashem were not eliminated. And those can be sung, and those are still appropriate at the Chatunah, at a wedding. All of those items are fine. The Shirot that they're speaking about here are songs of love and friendship. Those types of songs are inappropriate now because of the Churban HaBayit. And as a sensitivity to the Churban HaBayit, because, in a sense, our love with Hashem has been somehow severed because of the loss of the Beit HaMikdash, so too our love between fellow men is also lost in that way. And therefore those Shirot are inappropriate, or we'll call it too much simcha in the face of Churban HaBayit, and therefore it would be inappropriate. Amar Mar Baravashi, Lididi Chazilei, I saw these Shedim there, Umenageach Kitora, and they gore like an ox. Meaning that these destructive Shedim that take residence in these deserted houses, they are terrible bringers of destruction because they run around goring like oxes and they wrought destruction on these places. Amar Avuna, Zimra, Denagde, Udebakre, Shari. The song of those that are rowing the boats and those that are plowing the fields, those are mutar. Udegardai, Asir. On the other hand, those of the Gardai or the Oroch Agirsa of Gildai that are considered to be problematic. The reason being that the song that is used by the rowers and by the plowers are for work purposes. In order to keep the rowers engaged on the same timing, they sing a song that helps them to stay engaged, to work at the rowing, and to stay on the same timing. So therefore, the song there has a value besides the song itself. The value is that the song helps them do their job and to do their work. The same thing with the plowing of the fields. The oxen that are pulling the plow, it helps them to stay straight and to move along. When you sing to them, that has a benefit in the work. On the other hand, the singing of the weavers, or if you say it's the gildai, of the leather workers or the tanners, that singing is just for fun, as Rashi says over here, in oil l'schok. It's for laughter, it's comical in nature, and therefore it's not a benefit to the work itself, it's simply a entertainment. That is not allowed, because that'd be inappropriate here. So it depends on what the purpose of the song is. The purpose of the song, which has toilet, that has benefit to the work that's at hand, then it's a fine song. Songs that are simply there for the entertainment value and the pleasure value, those would be inappropriate. Ravuna batel zimra. Ravuna, in his auspices as the Morad Atra, eliminated all song from the city. Kamea avze bezuza. Geese started to sell 100 for one zuz. Umea sa'achite bezuza. And 100 sa' worth of wheat for one zuz. And people weren't even buying it. It was so plentiful. The brocha in the city was so plentiful that even at these cheap prices, they weren't buying it. Basically, it was a subtle approval of what he had done, that when he eliminated the Zimra, brocha came to the town. And that was evidence of the fact that he was doing the right thing by eliminating it. After Rav Chista came along and Zalzilbe, he didn't care so much. He wasn't so particular about it. And he didn't uphold this Takana that Rav Huna had put in place. Then he buy Abza Bezuza v'lom nishtakach. At that time, he tried to buy a goose, one goose, for Zuz, and he couldn't even find it. Meaning that there was nothing available, that things were so scarce. So here you see from the Gemara, these subtle approvals of the behavior of these Amoraim. One who eliminates Zimran, you see the benefit. The other one who didn't eliminate it, and you see the problems that arose. And Rav Yosef, Zimre Gabre Ivane Nashe Pritzuta. If the men are singing, and it's responsive in nature, which is the men sing, and then the women respond in song, that is Pritzut. Zamre Nashe, on the other hand, if the women are the initiators, Va'ane Gavre, and the response comes from the men, Ke'esh Binuert. That is like fire on flammable material. Those are the residual of the grains, which are very flammable. It's like fire on flammable fuel. L'may nafkamina, why does it make a difference? Both of them are problematic. As Rashi notes, both of them involve kolbi isha irva. So in either case, they are inappropriate and they are wrong. So then what's the reason to term them in a different manner? One to say one is pritzuta and the other one is like fire on flammable material. It says, l'btulei ha-mikamiha. If you're dealing with a situation in which both practices are extant and you're trying to eliminate them, which one should take precedence in eliminating? The people are only going to listen to you about one of them. Or if you have to give priority to which you're going to eliminate, eliminate the one where the women are singing and the men are responding first. Because the ones who respond have to listen carefully to the ones who are initiating the song in order to know their timing to when to respond. So that means if the women are the initiators and the men are responding to them, that means not only do you have a problem with Kol B'Ish of Erva, but they're actually paying heed to this song. They're listening very carefully. And therefore, it Mavirit Yitzro Ke'ish B'Nu'eret. It gets the Yitzhar Hara going burning like the fire to this flammable material. And therefore, you'd want to eliminate that first because that's much more problematic than simply when the men are singing and the women are responding where there's a problem with Kol B'Ish of Erva, but they're not listening as carefully to the women because they are the initiators. They're not the ones who are responding. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Kol shoteva arba'a mine zemer, mevi chamesh puraniyot leolam. Whoever drinks with these four different instruments brings five punishments to the world. Shenemar. Hoi mashkimei baboker shechar. Woe to those that get up in the morning drinking their intoxicating beverages. Yirdofu machrei b'neshef yayin yadli keim. And they run after the wine into the night to light themselves up to enjoy. Vaya kinor vanevel tof vichalio. And they will have the lyre, the harp, the drum, and the flute. Vayayin mishtehem. And the wine of their parties. Vetpo Hashem lo yabitu. And they don't see the works of Hashem. And they forget about God. That's basically what the Pasuk in Yeshayahu is referring to. That they're parting away and they pay no heed to the word of Hashem or what Hashem wants from them. Maktiv acharav, what is written right afterwards? Lachein, this is the result of this behavior. Gala mi mibli dat, that my nation will be put into galut, into exile without any thought. Shegormim galut leolam. That's number one. Uchvodo mitei ra'av. And those that were honored now become the corpses of hunger or famine, meaning that they die by starvation. Shmeimin rav leolam, that they also bring famine to the world. Vehamono, and the multitudes, tzichei tzama, the multitudes are parched by thirst. Shigormim l'torah shetishtakach milomda, they cause Torah to be forgotten from those that learn it. Over here, he's using the word mayim and parch as a parable to Torah, that Torah is like mayim, is like water. And so if they're parched and thirsty for water, that means that there's no longer Torah to be had. Those that learn Torah forget their Torah. Vayishach Adam, vayishpal ish. He humbles man and puts down individuals. Shugomim shvelut luson osho kodesh baruchu. Because the bringing down, the lowering, of, here it's a euphemism, to the haters of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is really means HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They caused the Hashem to be brought down. Vein ish el HaKadosh Baruch Hu shenemar, we've seen this before, Hashem ish milchama. Ish refers to God. So it caused the diminution of God because of the fact that it's a chilul Hashem, what happens to Bnei Israel, and that affects the image of God. Veinei gvoim tishpalno. And the eyes of those that are haughty will be brought down. Shegormim shvelut shel Yisrael, that cause Israel to be downtrodden. Umakti bacharav, what's written afterwards? So here you see there are five different punishments that come from the pasuk before, which is the celebrations with those four instruments, where they party without regard to Hashem's word, then the punishments here are brought down, these five different punishments. And written right after it is, Lachain, Hirchiva Sh'ol Nafsha. Therefore, the Gehinom opens up its, widens its existence, Upara Priyab Lebli Chok. It opens up its mouth without any limit. V'yarad Hadara V'hamuna U'sho'una V'alayizba. And therefore, all the glory and its multitudes and the tumult and those that are reveling all end up inside of it. Meaning that the Gehinom swallows all of these different individuals. The pasuk there that's found is a pasuk that we actually say on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim, which is the end of the brach of Amelech HaKadosh. It says, Vayikba Hashem Tzvakot B'mishpat, that what is the solution to this problem? Is Vayikba Hashem Tzvakot B'mishpat, that God will rise up with the Tzvakot Mishpat. And that is the response to this, that God's bringing about his fury on the people and them being punished. That Mishpat will be the response or the correction to this problem. And so that's the pasuk that's intervening that they skipped. Vayikba Hashem Tzvakot B'mishpat, Vakel HaKadosh Niktash B'tzdaka. So that's the solution. What is the proper behavior? Vayikba Hashem Tzvakot B'mishpat. Hashem will be elevated, will be sanctified by Mishpat when he brings the retribution to the people. Vakel HaKadosh Niktash B'tzdaka and Tzedek. When Hashem does Tzedek and when Hashem carries out those punishments, then he will be sanctified. Mishmeitu Nevi'im Rishonim. When the Nevi'im Rishonim died, there was no longer Urim V'tumim. Man Nevi'im Rishonim. Who are these Nevi'im Rishonim that are associated with the Urim V'tumim? Am Rav Huna Zid David Ushmuel Ushlomo. This is David, Shmuel, and Shlomo. This is very early. These are the very early Nevi'im. Rav Nachman Amar Bibei David Zimnin Salik Zimnin Lo Salik. Nachman says, in David's time, sometimes it worked, sometimes it doesn't work. Sharei she'al tzadok v'altalo. Because tzadok, a kohen, asked of the Urim Tumim, and he got an answer. She'al Evyatar v'lo altolo. Evyatar queried of the Urim Tumim, and he did not get an answer. Shenamar v'yal Evyatar. Says that Evyatar went out, and he asked of the Urim Tumim, and he's not responded to. The Gemara Esther tells us in other places that, this is in the time of the merit of Shalom, that there is a transition in the Kuna Gdolah then between Evyatar to Tzadok, because Evyatar is no longer answered by the Urim V'Tumim, and Tzadok is answered by the Urim V'Tumim. Rav Nachman views that as a problem in the ability of the Urim V'Tumim to work. I mean, it worked sometimes, didn't work other times. Gemara in other places indicates it was a reflection on Evyatar, a Kohen, that he was no longer Ra'ui to be the Kohen Gadol. And therefore now there's a transition from Abiatar to Tzadok, meaning that Abiatar is relieved of his duty, and then Tzadok HaKohen becomes the Kohen Gadol, because he's the one being responded to and not Abiatar. And that shows that was the timing of the transition. Doesn't explain to us why Abiatar loses it, but obviously there's something where Hashem is favoring Tzadok over Abiatar at that time. Meiti Rabba Bar Shmuel. Bahi Lidrosh Elukim, Bimei Zichariyahu, Hemevin bir'ot Elokim. So here you say about Zechariah, it says that he was able to be Doresh God in the time of Zechariah. Hemevin bir'ot Elokim. And he understood with that which he was seeing from God. My love, what does it mean that he's seeing from God? Be'urim b'tumim. It sounds like he's seeing what the Urim b'tumim has to say, and that's how he's getting information. Lo, b'nevi'im. That means from the Nevi'im. So Tashma, the Gemara says, Mishachara Beit HaMikdash Rishon Batlu Arei Migrash Pasku Urim B'tumim U'Pasak Melech MiBeit David. At the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, the Arei Migrash, which are the Arei Leviim, were eliminated. The Urim B'tumim stopped, and Malchut Beit David also stopped, and not permanently, but it was suspended at that time, because even when they came back in the second Beit HaMikdash, there was no king because they were under the sovereignty of the Persian Empire. And then later on, the Hashmonaim take over, and then later the Romans take over. So there wasn't a melech from Beit David, even though the Gemara speaks about that Beit David has the Nisi'im that came from Beit David, and that Zerubbabel was possibly from Beit David. Vimlachshach adam lomar, and people whisper you to say, Vayomer hatirshata lahem, asher lo yochlu mikodesh hakodeshim, adamoda kohen lo urim bitumim. Then hatirshata say to them, don't eat from the kodesh hakodeshim until the kohen stands up with the urim bitumim. So it sounds like there was an urim bitumim in the bayit sheni, because this is a pasuk about bayit sheni, it's in Ezra, and it says, mentions the urim bitumim. So it says, Amar lo, you can respond to them. Somebody says to a friend, it's an expression, it's a pitgam, that says, oh, until tchiyat ha-meitim, or until Mashiach ben David comes, until Mashiach comes. Which means it means forever. Instead of saying it in that way, Urim Vitumim wasn't extant at that time. But he's saying, until the Urim Vitumim means forever, it should be this way, till the Urim Vitumim comes back. And that's what is meant by this. So that means, the Gemara now is concluded, that all Bayit Rishon, there was an Urim Vitumim. It was only with the Churban HaBayit that the Urim Vitumim was eliminated. So how can you say the Urim Vitumim was eliminated at the time of David, Shlomo, and Shmuel, if we have it being utilized all the way till the end of Bayit Rishon? So obviously that can't be the explanation. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzhak, Man Nevi'im Rishonim, Afuke Mechagai Zecharia Umalachi Dachronim Ninhu. Nevi'im Rishonim means anyone besides these later Nevi'im. These later Nevi'im or Nevi'im of Bayit Sheni. Nevi'im of Bayit Sheni are Chagai, Zecharia, and Malachi. And they do not have the Urim Vitumim, but the Nevi'im Rishonim do. And it's a difference between Bayit Rishon versus Bayit Sheni. Tetanu Rabbanan, Mishemetu Chagai, Zecharia, and Malachi, Nistalka Ruach HaKodesh mi Yisrael. At the death of Chagai, Zecharia, and Malachi, these are the last of the Nevi'im, Ruach HaKodesh leaves Klal Yisrael. It becomes or comes down and manifests as a batkol now. So what you see here is a diminishment of the contact between God and man. That is God and man, which is slowly going down. And we'll note what the Gruah says, which is that there's a correlation between the elimination of the desire for avodah zarah and nevuah, which is that in Judaism we see nothing as being inherently evil or inherently good. But rather, these are drives that individuals have. Those drives can be manifest in good and bad. So if a person has a shifa, a drive to get close to God, it can be manifest in avodah zarah, it can be manifest in nevuah. So that means that when the yetzer hara for avodah zarah exists, that's when nevuah also exists. After the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah eliminate the desire for avodah zarah, which happens in the beginning of Bayit Sheni with the Nevi'im, the Chagai, Zecharia, Malachi were the beginning of what they call the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, and they eliminate it, then Nevuah also goes away, because the elimination of that desire to strive to get closer to God eliminates the avodah zarah, but also eliminates the Nevuah, or the ability to get close to Nevuah. That's been described here, that the death of Chagai, Zecharia, Malachi, there was no longer Nevuah. Then it came in a lower form of communication between God and man, and that is Batkol. They were sitting in the Aliyah in Beit Guria in Yericho. All of a sudden a heavenly voice comes down. There is someone here who is ra'uy to have the presence of God upon him, meaning to be a Navi. But the generation is not worthy. They all looked at Hillel HaZaken, who was the one that was appropriate for this bestowing of the presence of God. Shemait, his bidul. And when he died, his eulogy included something about this. Hey chasid, hey anav, tamido shel Ezra. What a righteous individual. What a humble individual. He was a student of Ezra. Meaning that there is some sort of connection between Hillel HaZaken and Ezra in this idea that Hillel was of the level of those earlier Nevi'im, or those that were leaders of Klal Yisrael. So now they're in a Aliyah in Yavne, as before they were in an Aliyah in Beit Guria Bericho. Now lehem batkol min hashamayim. Again, a heavenly voice comes down to them. There is one individual here who is appropriate or worthy of the presence of God being bestowed upon him. Elishin doro zakayin lekach. But his generation is not worthy of this. They put their eyes on Shmuel HaKatan, that he was the one. Shmuel HaKatan is the one who, when the Gemara in Brachot says they needed someone to institute a bracha for Shmona Esrei, for the problematic individuals, he was the one who penned the Lamal Shinim. That was Shmuel HaKatan, because of his, you can see here, his stature. He was, in a sense, imbued a ra'uy for Ashrat HaShchinah, and therefore they saw in him the ability to pen such an additional bracha to that which Yansei HaKnesset HaGdolah had instituted. So you need someone who is of that genre to do it. And Shmuel HaKatan, here you see by the bat kol, is on par with those of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Ukshemeit hispidu. And again, when he died, they gave him the spate, Hey Anav, Hey Chassid, Tamido Shel Hillel. It's interesting here that they reverse the words. They say, what a humble individual. Hey Chassid, what a righteous individual. Tamido Shel Hillel, a student of Hillel. Student of Hillel HaZakein. Well, HaZakein was called Hey HaChassid, Hey Anav. So it was the other way around. But here, Shmuel HaKatan is known by his Anivut. V'avu Amar B'shat Mitato. And he says at his deathbed, on his deathbed, he makes some statements that they see as being prophetic when he dies, showing or demonstrating that there was this semblance of nevuah inside of Shmuel Katan. On his deathbed, he says, Shimon v'Ishmael l'charba, says Shimon and Ishmael will be died by the sword. That he's referring to here is Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Ishmael, Kohen Gadol. The story of the Asarah Harugei Malchut begins with the story about Shimon Gamliel and Ishmael Kohen Gadol. He says they are going to be killed by the Malchut. Cherev is a representation that the government will kill them, that they're going to be persecuted by the Romans. V'chavrohi, the Katla, and their peers will be killed, which is referring to people like Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion, Rabbi Akiva, who are killed by either by burning at the stake or by combing by iron combs. V'shara ma'le biza, the remainder of the nation is going to be left to plundering, and terrible sarot are going to come on the nation. So here it's referencing to the Hadrianic persecutions, and here he is indicating what's going to happen. He gives some sort of prophetic view as to what's going to happen to these great individuals. Rashi over here makes an interesting comment. He says that Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel were in the time of Yavan, Malchut Yavan, which is very problematic. It says in the time of the Greek rule. And during the Greek rule, these happen. And then he goes on to say that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion, which clearly are persecuted by the Romans. Now, it's true that the Asarah Harugei Malchut don't take place all at the same time. They're over a large span of time. They're brought together to give an impression that they were all killed at the same time. But that's not the case. They lived at different times. There's, in terms of when they lived, the Chachamim that I mentioned, the Asarah Harugei Malchut, live over a very large span of time. A large portion of it is a problem from the Hadrianic persecutions in the times of the Bar Kokhba revolt, but there are people from other places. Rashi extends it all the way back to the time of Malchut Yavan, seems very difficult to suggest, because over here you're talking about Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Nisi'im in Eretz Yisrael, who are at a much later time, and doesn't correlate with the time of Yavan. Rashi in tomorrow's daf also will make a comment of a similar nature, which seems off in terms of the timeline in which he's speaking. It seems more likely that they're speaking about the time of the Roman persecutions and not the Greek persecutions. Baf Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, Bikshu Lomar, in Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava's funeral, they also wanted to say, Hey Chassid, Hey Anav. They wanted to make that same eulogy that was appropriate for Shmuel HaKatan and Hillel HaZakein. El Shenitrefa Sha'ah, but it didn't, the time didn't allow. She'en Maspidim Al Harugei Malchut, because Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is killed by the Romans. And if you are killed by the authorities for a violation of the laws of the authorities, you're not allowed to have a eulogy. And so therefore they were prevented from giving the eulogy that would have been appropriate for Yehuda ben Bava along the lines of Hillel HaZakein and Shmuel HaKatan, but they didn't say it because of the circumstances under which he was killed. Mishacharav Beit HaMikdash Batel HaShamir. At the time of the Churban HaBayit, the Shamir was no longer in use. Tan Rabbanan. Shamir Shabo Bana Shlomo at Beit HaMikdash. The Shamir was used to build the Beit HaMikdash by Shlomo HaMelech. Shinemar, Babait Bihi Banoto Even Shlema Masa Nivna. So that it says that that house, the Mikdash, when it was built out of whole stones that were quarried. Hadvarim Kichtavam Divir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, take it literally. They chiseled, quarried the stones from the Machtzevot, from the quarries. And as they were chiseled off the stone from the quarries, that's how they brought them into Mikdash. They didn't have to do any more fixing of the stone, chiseling of the stone, in order to fix its shape once they took it out of the quarry itself. So there was one cutting or one quarrying of the rocks that was at the quarry itself. They didn't have to do any other fixing after that. Amalo Rabbi Nechem, you have a chiv shel markein? Can you really say that? V'halo kvar ne'amar, kol eila avanim yikarot, migororot b'migeira. These were all expensive stones that were filed down by the, whether it's the filed by the saw, but it seems that they worked on the stone after it was already quarried from the quarries. So that means that they did chisel and they did work on the stones afterwards. In came atama lomar lo nishma b'bayit b'hibanoto. It says there that they didn't hear the work of tools near the Mikdash when they were building it, implying that there wasn't any chiseling or working of the stones. Shaya matkin bibachutz umachnis bimifnim. Rabbi Nechem solves the problem, says that they did all the work outside of Yerushalayim, or outside of the area of Har HaBayit. When they brought the stones to that area, they seemed like they were just brought out of the quarry. They were whole and ready to be used. Amar Rabbi, nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda ba'avnei Mikdash. When Rabbi Yehuda says, I think it's correct with regards to the stones of the Mikdash, divrei Rabbi Nechem ya'avnei Beito. And the words of Rabbi Nechemiah are right when it comes to the building of the palace of Shlomo. It's described in Melachim Aleph are two buildings that are made. There's the palace of Shlomo Melech that's built at the same time as the Mikdash. With regards to the Mikdash, it makes sense that those stones that were quarried out from the quarry, they were whole and brought in that manner right to the Mikdash. Whereas by the palace, they fixed them again. They had to chisel them again, but they had to do it outside of the city. Rabbi Nechemiah Shamir Lamayato. According to Rabbi Nechemiah, what did they use the Shamir for? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it makes sense. Because if they quarried the stone out and they weren't going to cut it anymore, then they used the shamir, which is this little creature that cuts through stone. They can use that to shape the stones without having any cutting noise. But for Rabbi Nechemiah, who says they did cut the stones and did chisel the stones even after they were quarried, then what do they use the shamir for? We need it for this braita. When it comes to the stones of the Choshen, as well as the stones that go, the Avnei Shoam, that go on the shoulders of the Kohen Gadol's Bigadim, there you don't write the words that are supposed to be on them in ink. Mishim Shenemar Pituchei Chutam, because they have to be carved in. Vein Misartin Aleihem, we do not carve in the names to them, Bizmel, with a chisel or a knife, Mishim Shenemar Bimiluotam, that they have to be whole. If you chisel into them, then the stones are no longer whole. Ela Kotev Aleihem Bidjo, you write on them with ink, umarele lehen shamir, and then you show the shamir the letters in ink, mibachutz on the outside, behen mibaka'ot melehem, and then they split by themselves, kit te'einazo, like this fig, shenivkat b'imotachama, when you dry the figs out, over time they split open when you're drying them out. Ve'ena chaserakum, when they split open, it's not because they're missing anything, it's simply because they've expanded and they've split. Ukebikazu shenivkat b'imeo gashamim, the same way that the fields in the time of the winter when the rain comes, that they have cracks and crevices in them, they don't miss anything. So it's an expansion of the area that causes a cracking, but doesn't cause any loss of stone. The same thing here. They would draw the letters. The shamir would cut through, not by consuming any of the stone, but by simply opening it up or splitting it open so that it was carved in without a loss of any of the stone. Tan Rabbanan, shamir ze briyato kitse'ora. It is a creature the size of a barley seed. It was created in creation. And nothing hard stands in its way. But well, if that's the case, how do you keep it? How do you keep it at bay? How do you trap it? Because it'll eat through anything that you give to it. You wrap it up in cotton. You put it into a tube of lead. Filled with the leftovers of the barley, the shells, or the refuse of the barley. So there, these are all soft items. And the soft items, it's unable to eat through. It eats through hard items, but it's unable to eat through soft items. So they kept it inside of this lead tube with soft items, because then it couldn't eat its way out. Lead is also a softer of the metals. Amar Rabbi Ami, Mishkarav Mikdash Rishon, B'teila, Shira, Franda, Zuchukit Levana. So these special items were eliminated at the Churban HaBayit. Again, this idea that the Churban HaBayit has major impact on the world, not just a simple, we lost the Mikdash. Lost the Mikdash affects many items, that this silk, this type of silk was no longer available after the Churban HaBayit, and this white glass, which was a very special type of glass, was no longer available. Tanya Nami Yochim Mishrab Mikdash Rishon Betela Shira Franda Tzuchid Levanav Rechem Brazel. All these three items disappeared from the market or unable to be found anymore. Yeshamim Av Yain Karush Abba Misnir Adomeh Ki Gulei Dvela. So too, this coagulated wine that used to come from Snir, that was similar to cakes of dried figs, that wine also was no longer, obviously it's a delicacy or something special, unique, that also no longer was available after the Churban HaBayit. Again, this idea that the Churban HaBayit has impact not only on the spiritual realm, but on the natural order of the world. But no fit tzufim. My no fit tzufim. What is this sweet item? Amrav solit shetzafal gabei nafa. That it is the fine flour that floats on top of the sieve. The domeli isash in elosha bedvash v'shemen. And similar to dough that was kneaded with oil and honey. Which means that the wheat kernels had so much oil or fat in them that when they ground them, they milled them, and then they put them through the sieve, they stuck because there was so much oil in them that they were unable to go through the sieve. And it felt like they were already doughy, even though it was solid, it was fine flour. Levi Amar, shtei kikarot nidbakot b'tanur tofachot ubaot ad shmigot zo lazo. So when you put two loaves of bread into the oven, the way they used to bake their bread is they used to stick the dough to the side walls of the oven. So you put one on each side, and they expand to the point where they touch each other. So that's a brocha b'isa. So that's what nofet sufim means. That there was a brocha on the isa as long as the Beit HaMikdash was extant. At the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, that brocha left the isa. Shuben Levi Amar, Zedvash, Abba Min Tzifia, or Min Atzofim. This is honey that comes from this location. That's what Nofet Sufim means. These sweet delicacies, or this dripping honey. My Mashma, how do you know that that's the case? Kimitargim Rav Sheshet. The way that Rav Sheshet translates the Pasuk that's found in the beginning of Dvarim, Kasher Tasena HaDvarim, like the bees make. How does he translate that? Kaman Nitzan Dbriata, V'shaitin Baromi Alma, Umachin Dubsha mi Isvei Tura. Talks about that these beings that are floating around, these bees that float around at the heights of the world, and they bring honey from the growth or the vegetation of the mountains. And so that's what it means here. Dubsha, the honey of Tzofim, of the high places of the mountains. And that's why Rashi says the word is Tzofim as opposed to Tzifia that we have in our Gemara. So that's the honey that comes from these mountainous regions. Tanhotam. Kol anitzok tohor chutz midvash tzifim v'hatzepichim. It's a Mishnah in Makshirim, which we also saw in Nazir, which is that all liquids, if you're pouring the liquid to a utensil below that's tamei, and the one above is tohor, then there's no bridge. It doesn't create a connection between the lower utensil and the upper utensil to make the upper utensil tamei, with the exception of dvash tzifim v'tzapichim. This type of honey, these two types of honey, that's not the case because they're so viscous that they have a recoil. When you pull back the upper container, the nitzok pulls back because of the viscosity of the item or because of the thickness of the item, it's considered to be as if it's a solid that is connecting between the two cups. My zifim, why is it called dvash zifim? I'm Rabbi Yochanan dvash shimizayfin bo. It's honey in which you can cheat on it because you can stick in water and wine and it's so thick that you can't tell that they added water or wine to the dvash. It's a name of a place. It's a location from which the honey came from. It says in Yoshua, when it's talking about the division of the areas of Yehuda, it calls the places called Zif, Vatelem, Ubalot. So you see there's a place called Zif. When the Zifim come and tattletale on David and tell Shaul where David is hiding, to give up his location, Shaul can attack him. So my zifim, Rabbi Yochanan bnei Adam sham zifim divrehem. It's people who lie. That people who either lie or bring news, tell on other people or tattletale on other people. Rabbi Elazar omer hashem mikomam. No, they're called zifim here because that's where they came from. Gedichtiv zif etelem baalot. So similarly, the word zifim, when we speak about here, dvash zifim, so there they argue about whether zifim is a location or whether it's describing the type of honey, which means that it's a honey that you can cheat with or hide in. And same thing here, Bevoat Zifim, when it's mentioned to Elim, these people that came and told on David where he is and disclosed the information to Shaul, were they people who are liars and people disclose information inappropriately? Or were they individuals who came from the place called Zif? So the same type of argument that is found there. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Memchet Amud Bet.